So, no more cravings, no more hankerings, no more longings. I'll just exist in bhakti. But bhakti involves the full emotional spectrum. That you can experience from the moment your devotional service begins. There's appropriate craving and hankering and longing at all levels of bhakti, from the beginning stage to the highest stages. We'll briefly speak about material craving and longing. It has to be there because you're the spirit soul and you're missing Krishna, and therefore you express your missing of Krishna in terms of craving and longing for material things. One part of the material illusion you might find very interesting, which is documented, again, by scientific research. It's good that scientists investigate these kind of things. It keeps them out of trouble, you know? Keeps them from speculating about, you know, how did the universe begin, or... Srila Prabhupada once said it like that. We don't mind if scientists want to invent, you know, technological devices. But when they start talking about the origin of the universe and what the living entity is, then... That's a problem. So, normally in conditioned consciousness, we'll think the more choices and options I have in life, the better. One privilege of being wealthy is that that wealth allows me to have so many options, so many choices. Actually, though, research shows the more choices you have, the more anxiety you're in. Because you may, after much deliberation, choose one alternative. Okay, this is what we'll do. We'll go to Paris. We'll not go to Las Vegas. But the way Maya works, of course, researchers, material researchers don't know this is Maya. But the way Maya works is that as soon as you get to Paris, inevitably you start thinking, this is pretty good here, but maybe Las Vegas could have been better. This is known in scientific language as opportunity costs. Any opportunity you take will cost you in that you didn't do another opportunity. The price you pay for going to Paris is that you missed out on going to Las Vegas. Now, the way the illusory energy works is it makes you feel that you're going to go to Paris, you're going to be satisfied, and that'll be it. But that's not the nature of illusory energy. You go to Paris, and then after a short time, you're thinking, well, could have been, maybe something else could have been better. Maybe Las Vegas, indeed. And of course, if indeed you had a bad time in Paris, then something kicks in called regret, in which you torture yourself. What a fool I was. Why didn't I listen to whoever told me to go to Las Vegas? And you persecute yourself to the point that you can actually become depressed. You would think that the persons who most thoroughly analyze their alternatives, check out all the reviews, research online, what's the best vacation spot, the best hotel, the best restaurants, whatever, where to get the best and cheapest rent-a-car, and on and on it goes. So, they do research, what's the best seat on the airplane flying over.
Sounds familiar.
You would think those persons are the best at getting happiness. But actually, research shows that they're not as happy in terms of how material researchers categorize happiness. they're not as happy as those who are just, I'll make the best choice at the moment and I'll live with it. In fact, those who research all the various alternatives so thoroughly, so painstakingly, they end up risking borderline depression because they blame themselves. They take such a piece out of themselves if anything is wrong about their choice. They feel devastated. So, we spoke on Tuesday about adaptation, which is another problem with thinking, I have so many choices, therefore, my life is more successful. We spoke about how adaptation means whatever you get, sooner or later, it fades from its position as being a source of thrill in your life, it fades into the background, routine. This has great lessons for us in terms of craving. What's the use in craving? What's the use in hankering when you know what's going to happen? The thrill will be gone. Even if you are satisfied, that satisfaction won't last long. So what to do? Do we turn off that part of ourselves now that we are coming to spiritual life? I'll just be Om Shanti. No craving, no hankering. That part of me so wounded from birth after birth and material existence, I won't recognize that part of me anymore. No. Bhakti, at all levels, from neophyte to most advanced, involves hankering, craving, longing. At the most advanced levels, you see in Narottam Das Thakur, his songs. You can see them in the songs of Bhakti Vinod Thakur. When will that day be mine when I can chant the holy name properly? You can see, of course, in Lord Chaitanya's Shikshastaka, his 8 prayers, this craving and longing. In the beginning stages, we don't claim that our spiritual emotions are so developed, but still there is legitimate craving and longing. A devotee at any stage of his or her spiritual life longs and craves for devotee association and devotional service. That is a heartfelt urge, a hankering, and it should be cultivated. Even if you may say, well, I don't really feel like that all the time, so shouldn't I wait until it comes to me? Craving for devotee association and craving for devotional service. You can do that, you can wait, but you'll heighten your bhakti experience, you'll heighten your Krishna conscious experience by expressing those legitimate aspirations from the beginning, because those aspirations are real. It's not a put on, even though you may say, but I don't wake up in the morning longing for devotee association, longing for devotional service. So therefore, just let it, when that time comes, then it will be. But the desire is legitimate. That's the point. So you don't have to wait. You can speed up the development, so to speak, of those desires by pushing yourself in that direction, because it is for real. In other words, you're pushing yourself away from the disease state into the healthy state. One thing I found important in discussing this topic of spiritual and material craving in various places of the world is for our persons who are already practicing bhakti, we have to distinguish between relief and attraction. For many of us, A major part of the motivation in our coming to Krishna consciousness is seeking material relief. Krishna says that in Bhagavad Gita. It's one of the four main motivations. And I've done surveys, informal surveys, on every continent of the world. And generally, in most places, most devotees say they came to Krishna consciousness because they were materially exhausted and they were looking for relief. Yes, they're also interested in knowledge. Yes, they're also inquisitive. But generally, they felt dissatisfied, a deep, gnawing sense of dissatisfaction with material life, and they wanted something better. When you first come to Krishna consciousness, you feel an overwhelming sense of relief. Whew, I've escaped the Holocaust, I'm out of the frying pan. And that feeling of relief, it's like on a super hot summer day in New York and you walk into an air-conditioned room. You know, first you're... That stage of in bhakti can last a while, but we don't want to prolong it too long. We don't want to rest in that stage of the typical example, someone banging their head against the wall constantly, and then a well-wisher gets that person to stop banging the head, the first thing you feel is relief. But you don't feel positive use of your head. You feel relief. Since I stopped banging my head against the wall, things are a lot better. Well, a mistake we can make in Krishna consciousness is to confuse that relief for attraction to Krishna. So I'd like to propose that we need to be careful in distinguishing between basing our Krishna conscious motivation in terms of feeling relief or in terms of attraction for Krishna. Now, in discussing this, please bear in mind, I'm not at all saying there's something wrong in coming to Krishna consciousness for material relief. Well, that's a sign of intelligence. But we can't rest on those haunches year after year after year. Just being in the relief stage. I'm not suffering anymore. I'm not fried anymore. That'll be there for a while, sometime in the beginning. But sooner or later, our hearts have to begin to crave and long for devotional service and for association with devotees. And that way, we'll feel attraction to Krishna. In other words, sooner or later, we have to start looking for where is my attraction to Krishna and how can I increase it? And then we take up the means to increase that attraction. We start sorting out our lifestyle. This is how the hankering and craving on the spiritual platform begins. I want to arrange my lifestyle so that I can have the chance to feel increased attraction for Krishna. What do I have to do? You start asking questions to the senior leaders. You start asking questions to the older devotees, your spiritual master. I want to increase my attraction to Krishna. What do you recommend? When you start doing like that, you're moving out of that stage of just feeling material relief. You may see, and it happens from time to time, that some devotees don't get out of that stage of material relief. They're just in the recovery mode. I've been beat on the head so many times in material existence. I'll just maintain my existence in Krishna consciousness. But craving and hankering is a natural part of material life and spiritual life. So we don't put aside our craving and hankering and just feel relief in bhakti. We embrace the craving and hankering for the right thing. Finally, we found the right thing to crave, the right thing to hanker. It's very important then that in the beginning stage of Krishna consciousness, as soon as one realizes the importance of spiritual craving and hankering, you crave and hanker for the association of devotees and devotional service, because devotee means devotional service. Where is my service? When you ask, where is my service, you're asking, what is my heart and soul invested in? Now let's just think of our hearts right now. If you look in our heart, what is it that we see we are craving? What's in there that's, you know, that yearning? We can't say there's nothing there at all. No yearning, no hankering, no craving at all. Maybe there are things that we don't really want to look at too deeply. But still, that craving dynamic is there in the heart. Bhakti yoga means recognize it. Don't run away from it. Craving has an important spiritual role. So rather than just be numb to yourself, now I've been through that craving and hankering thing in material life, now I'm just existing as a devotee. We want more than that. We want every aspect of our being to be invested in bhakti. And that certainly means craving and hankering. Indeed, the craving and hankering for devotional service will replace the craving and hankering for material activities. So if we don't come to grips with that craving and hankering dynamic, we're missing a huge part of our existence. We're not connecting that in bhakti. We want to be more than religious, in other words. I like to explain that nowhere in Bhagavad Gita does Krishna say, believe in me. Everywhere in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is asking for investment of energies, investment of your life into methodology, laboratory practices, action in Krishna consciousness. Right, Bhagavad Gita is spoken on a battlefield. You can't be theoretical on a battlefield. Arjuna in no way was in a theoretical situation. So, if we look in our heart, what do we find? Just think, you don't have to say it. If I were in other parts of the world, I would ask, what do you see in your heart? And the hands are going, ah, I see this, I see that, but it's not culturally appropriate. I don't do it in I do it in Australia. Aussies are they have a saying about Australia. What's in the mind comes out of the tongue. I don't do it in New Zealand because New Zealanders are more Britishy and more reserved, and what's in the mind never comes out of the tongue. And I certainly don't do it in India. But in some parts of the world, like Russia, Ukraine, where the nature of people is conducive of that. You know. So, what do you see in your heart? Oh, you know, the men will go, I want girls. Ladies, you know, Ukraine will raise their hands. I want saris, as many as I can get. Or, I want money. That's what I see in my heart. So, we won't ask you to say that, but just in your own private way, take a snapshot of your heart. It's good to recognize that you have this craving, longing, energy. You may have repressed it. You may have denied it. It may be still hurting from the wounds of material existence, but still you have that craving, longing dynamic. Now, how are we going to get that heart to crave and long for devotional service? Then we're on the path of perfection. We're not on the path of perfection simply by being in the stage of desiring relief from material existence or feeling relief from our previous engagement in material existence. Because what happens as you progress in bhakti? Your memories of the material holocaust start to fade. Maybe some of you have noticed that. The first 2 years, you know, you're still in that never again mentality. Oh no, I've been there, done that, never again. Absolutely no. Then as the years go by, maybe it wasn't that bad. Or maybe I just made a few mistakes, and that's what made it really bad. But now with my better knowledge of how to live in the mode of goodness, maybe if I attempted those same things again, the result would be much better. The memory has started to fade of the impact of the devastation that you went through in material existence, trying to please your senses. So you can't rely on just your memory of your previous devastations. There has to be something positive in your life. And indeed, bhakti yoga is about the supreme positive, Krishna and Krishna's service. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, there are three great treasures in life. Krishna, Krishna's service, and love of Krishna. We want to be wealthy in that way. So therefore, we're always thinking, how can I arrange my life to get more wealth, the real wealth, the prema dana, the wealth of love of Krishna? What steps do I have to take to sort out my life in that way? This is being proactive in the best sense. I'm not just going to sit here and feel relief from material existence. I've got devotees around me. Prasad is there. I'm not feeling the pangs of material existence anymore. I like that usage Prabhupada has of pangs of material existence. You know what a pang is, especially on a fast day when you have a hunger pang? Yeah, it's like a gnawing, sharp feeling in your belly. Where's the food? My belly's empty. So the pangs of material existence. I'm not satisfied. I need sense gratification. I need the body and mind to be gratified. It's not happening. Where is it? So when you're in the preliminary stage, you're feeling relief from those pangs. No more, never again. But as I said, don't expect that to sustain you properly in your Krishna conscious career. It has to be the supreme positive. The real wealth. You've seen people before who want wealth. They're willing to work night and day for it. They're determined at all costs to make the money. We want to have that same attitude for Krishna. This planning, how to arrange your life so you can increase your attraction for Krishna, is a necessary prerequisite to get to that super high devotional stage called lolium, spiritual greed. The spiritual greed that Rupa Goswami talks about, tatra lolium mulam ekalam, is nothing that can be understood with material senses. It is a spiritual emotion which has an intensity far beyond any material greed that you've ever experienced. Now, again, a question. Just visualize in your hearts when you were greedy. What were you greedy for before? Often, devotees say, greedy for ice cream. You have one bowl, you want another bowl, another bowl, another bowl. Some people say, I was greedy for money. Generally, you think of greed in terms of eating. Something is good, and you just have to have more, and you have to have more, and you have to have more. Greed is generally thought of in terms of something that you already have, but you just want more of it. Whereas lust is for something that you think you don't have and you have to get it. Or you don't have it in its proper magnitude or quality. And so therefore, you're lusting for for something you think you're missing. But greed, you have it, but you just don't have enough of it. More, more, more. The Western consumerism mantra. If something is good, then automatically more of that same thing is better. One TV is good, three are better. That's even the way people have relationships now, right? If one hookup is good, 10 is better. Why restrict yourself? In other words, be mathematical, be intelligent. Multiply your options. Recognize that indeed there's something in this one thing, and so to enhance my lifestyle, I just increase how many of those things I have. It seems right, it seems intelligent. Any university student, any adult, any little kid, little kids think that way, adults think that way. Little kid thinks, if I have one toy, then more toys would be better. When you're very young, all right, you'll be satisfied with one rattle or one doll or one toy truck. But very soon, especially because you're watching television, you realize you need more dolls and more trucks. And then you become a so-called adult, you so-called grow up, and you're always wanting more and more because it's a logical material assumption. I found a little bit of pleasure getting one thing. So if I get 10 of those things, I'll multiply my pleasure by 10. So, greed means I already have something, but I just want more and more and more of it. What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? Trividam narakasyeva dvam nashnam atmana. Three gates to hellish existence. Lust, anger, and greed. Every sane man, every sane woman must give these things up. Giving those things up, lust, anger, and greed, doesn't mean that you no longer have any emotional dynamics in your life. No. Once we move past the relief stage in Krishna consciousness, feeling relief, we want to actively get into the cultivation of spiritual lust, spiritual greed, and spiritual anger. The devotee lusts to use everything for Krishna's pleasure. It's a fun emotion to work on. Looking at every opportunity, every possibility. Krishna should have that. Everyone knows how to lust. Yes, it's fun, it's easy. Oh, how Krishna would feel getting this. I'd love to do that service for Krishna. Look at this opportunity. Look at this situation. It's all meant for Krishna's senses. Yes, that's coming alive internally. A devotee absorbed in devotional service, wherever he or she looks, sees opportunities for Krishna's service. That's an actual emotional dynamic combined with the intelligence. And then, the spiritual greed. I've been doing some chanting Hare Krishna. Why not chant Hare Krishna more? I've been associated with devotees to some degree. Why not double my pleasure, double my fun? I've been hearing something about Krishna. Well, why not hear more about Krishna? Just think, this is a tremendous opportunities for emotional expression. Legitimate and wonderful emotional expression in Krishna consciousness. How to lust for Krishna. How to be greedy for Krishna. I can't get enough of kirtan. Now you can actually put yourself in that situation. You don't have to say, well, I don't exactly feel like that now, so maybe I just wait until that feeling drops on me from out of the blue. No, because these are the natural symptoms of the pure spirit soul. You can, push yourself into that mentality and situation. And then watch how watch what takes over. Your natural spiritual inclinations are accelerated in their manifestation. You're helping out the process, so to speak. Now, it reminds me of a point I was discussing with Solanas Radhanath Maharaj in Chalpati a few months ago. In this bhakti process that our founder, Srila Prabhupada, has given us, based on, of course, the heritage of the entire Guru Parampara, Srila Prabhupada is so confident about his process, the sadhana, particular sadhana that he's devised for devotees, rules and regulations for devotional service and the performance of such. He said, even if you perform devotional service mechanically, if you just hear from the bhakti texts, specifically in this case he mentioned nectar devotion, if you just hear from the bhakti texts and do your devotional service mechanically, I have to do this because I have to. Okay, another day, another devotional service. Anyway, let me get into my routine. Even if you do it like that, sooner or later, very gradually, even with this mechanical attitude, because it's combined with hearing from the bhakti texts, just like our morning program you're singing, like Jai Radha Madhava, very intimate song. You're worshiping Tulsi Devi, singing Tulsi, the Tulsi Puja song, interspersed with the program of bhakti in its practice phase, are all these jewels of spontaneous love of Krishna. So Prabhupada commented, you do devotional service mechanically, but your ear is still receiving the bhakti sound vibration from the bhakti text. Still, he said, you'll develop raga. You'll develop spontaneous attraction for Krishna. Now, we can do our best to speed things up by consciously pursuing the spiritual lust, the spiritual greed. We don't have to wait till it drops upon us. We can help out the process. Of course, everything depends on the Guru and Krishna's mercy, but you can. There's nothing wrong in your being enthusiastic. There's nothing wrong in putting yourself forward in terms of more vibrant demonstrations of spiritual lust and spiritual greed. Indeed, what does Rupa Goswami say in Nectar of Instruction, Upadeshamrita? The first thing, Utsaha Nishchayadaya. The first thing of the six fundamentals for advance in the bhakti, the first thing is enthusiasm. Everyone likes to be around enthusiastic persons. Even in material life, people comment how much they like to be around someone who's the life of the party, who's vibrant, vivacious. Among such persons, they have a phrase when they want to compliment someone, you've really got a lust for life. Has anyone ever told you that? Well, how do we use that in devotional service, in Krishna consciousness? Indeed, I could say, you've really got a lust for devotional service. That is a great compliment. There's one devotee in the UK, Pragosh Prabhu. I always kind of seemingly, I dovetail my critical tendencies by seemingly criticizing him, but actually complimenting him. I say, you know, your problem is you're just a devotional serviceaholic. Yes, that is the wonderful stage we're longing for, to be addicted to devotional service. We can try to arrange our life to do that. That's the fun in life. That's the pleasure. Not to just be kind of like well, forgive the expression, but wallflowers in Krishna consciousness. Well, I'll just wait until someone asks me, you know, and hey, what do you want out of me, you know? I'm chanting my rounds and, follow the four rules, you know? What more do you want out of someone in Kali Yuga? Yeah. But if you can put yourself forth more, put yourself forward for lusting for devotional service, how exhilarating your life becomes. And anyone can do that. It doesn't depend on your material education. It doesn't depend on your gender. It simply depends on your embracing the reality of what is the real wealth, the real treasure in life, and having an acquisitive attitude about it. Yes, I want to long for devotional service. I want to long for the association of devotees. I can't get enough of it. Maybe you can remember greedy moments in your life when you explained, I just can't get enough of this. Maybe it was a favorite food. Who knows? Those feelings are meant for bhakti. Those feelings are meant for Krishna. So how do you get the ball rolling, so to speak? In enthusiastic association, you start being proactive, arranging your life to maximize all your possibilities for the expression of spiritual lust and greed. This is how to have a upbeat and exhilarating life in Krishna consciousness. Don't just be laid back and, well, part of being humble in bhakti is that you don't do anything till you're told, and you just wait until, you know, some service drops in your lap. Wait till some service opportunity crosses your path. But just think, if you have a proactive attitude about it, and you actually let it be known, I'm ready for service. I'm open for service. I was passing, I can say this example in the USA. I can't say in other parts of the world because they don't understand American sports. But I was passing through an airport, and, you know, there's big TV screens, and they were interviewing one top NFL receiver. And he didn't have his uniform on. He just was dressed casual clothes. He was talking. He and the quarterback were talking to the newscaster, and the quarterback said about him, complimenting him, you know, I don't have to worry. When I look downfield, you know, he's open. He's open. And then the receiver, you know, yeah, that's right. I'm always open. I'm open right now. It wasn't even on the field, you know. He's just showing it. This is Usaha, you know. He's not even in his football attire. He's off field, on, you know, being interviewed. And, I'm open right now. Give me a chance. Give me a chance. I said, wow. If I could be like that in Krishna consciousness, where's the service? I'm open right now. I'm ready. Just imagine, a line forming at Yajna Purusha's office door. You know, we're open. We're open right now. your hands extended like, you know, wide receiver waiting for the ball. Yeah. Just give us our chance. We're ready. So I thought when I just saw that out of the corner of my eye as I was rushing to the airport, wow. I could be like that. Or service. Srila Prabhupada's service to the Vaishnavas. Service to Krishna. In other words, regardless of the material motivations of the athlete, he understood, even though I'm being paid millions of dollars to play this game, still enthusiasm has to be there. He understood that. He had pride in his craft. I'm a pro. I'm an all-star wide receiver. So, enthusiastic anytime, any place, anywhere. Where's the ball? In other words, you're not paying me, $30 million a year for nothing. I'm ready. Wow, I just want to be like that. It's just the consciousness. Bhakti is no cheap thing. Devotional service is no cheap thing. You read in the beginning of Nectar of Devotion, the six super excellences about bhakti. And one of them is the rarity of devotional service. Klesha Gri Shubhada Moksha Lagrata Krit Sudurlabha Sandrananda Visheshatma Sri Krishna Karshani Lachasatma. So, devotional service is rarely achieved. It's no cheap thing. In fact, Rupa Goswami, in talking about greed in that verse, if that yearning for Krishna consciousness is available in any marketplace, buy it immediately, pay any price. But the fact is, it can't be attained by material methods after countless births in the material world. So we aspire to have that lolium, that spiritual greed. We hold it on high. We begin to make progress toward that high goal by being enthusiastic. And to be enthusiastic means use your intelligence. Arrange your life so that you can increase your possibilities for attraction to Krishna. Attraction to Krishna means attraction to devotional service. This takes some planning. It takes some use of intelligence, discrimination. It takes advice. Without advice in bhakti, the road's very difficult. You're trying to execute the highest technology. How, as Jesus said, how to be in the world but not of the world. How to be spiritual while you're within the material world. It's like how to remain dry while you're immersed in an ocean. Such most difficult technology requires guidance. So an enormous part of our enthusiasm and the proactive arranging of our life involves taking appropriate guidance. How to seize the opportunities for increasing our attraction to Krishna. Our intelligence starts to get going. There must be something in my life that I can do that will increase my attraction for Krishna. I can't just sit down on the job, so to speak. We read in the beginning of Nectar Devotion, bhakti is not an armchair activity. It's not armchair speculation. You get into it with your senses. Let us not be afraid to be sensory in bhakti because of the misuse of our senses in material existence. Bhakti yoga is the perfection of our sensory expression. Now, another thing I often hear from devotees is, look, we know all this, but why doesn't Krishna make it easy on us and just force us to love him? Why do we have to go through all this ordeal of, you know, being enthusiastic, rearranging our lives for maximum attraction to Krishna, declaring our openness for devotional service? Wouldn't it be just so much easy if Krishna, so much easier if Krishna would just force us to love him? No more challenges from the illusory energy, no more temptations, no more intense moments in which we have to sort ourselves out and just choose Krishna. Krishna does it all for us. He's all powerful. Why does he do that? So many places in the world, devotees have asked me this question. You're like, sometimes, you know, to withstand Maya is difficult. And you begin to wonder, is Krishna just torturing me by placing this most beautiful gem of bhakti before me, and then I have to endeavor, you know, through trials and tribulations to get that gem? It's kind of torturous, you know? I know without a doubt that the goal is supreme and so wonderful. But in Krishna's dangling that gem before us, isn't it kind of like torturing us? Because, you know, we just can't resist the material energy. We can't resist the illusion. Yet we know that there's this prima donna, this rarest treasure exists. Wouldn't it be just easier if Krishna just dropped it in our lap? Just zapped us. Wow. Love for Krishna. I love Krishna. No more ordeals. No more sadhana. When devotees say that, I ask them. I generally look for a couple. Do we have any couples here? All right. Yeah. Okay. How would you like it if, you know, you probably been married how many years?
Five.
Okay. The 5-year mark, and your wife one day tells you, you know, the only reason why I married you was because I was forced to. How would you feel?
Not so good.
Right. you know, naturally, you know, generally a man wants to feel that. You chose me because of my sublime qualities.
Yes.
You chose me, especially because of my intelligence. What do you think of my good looks? You chose me because of my practical problem-solving abilities.
Looks and I'm cute.
Yeah, of course. That's without saying. Yeah, that goes without saying. So you don't want forced love. You want to feel that she's, you know, she has chosen you voluntarily because she's attracted to you and recognizes that, you know, you're the superior option. For now and forevermore. So, why then, my next question is, why then do you want to, that Krishna has to have something that you yourself won't accept? You won't accept forced love, but we want Krishna to have that. Krishna, just force me to love you. Why do I have to go through all this ordeal of thinking how to become more attracted to Krishna, how to have more devotional service, how to have the holy name better, how to hear better the holy name, planning, adjusting, readjusting, balancing, rebalancing. Wouldn't it be so much easier if Krishna just it'd be good for me, it'd be good for Krishna. But then, when it comes to your own loving affairs, no, you don't want forced love. So just see how bogus we are. We want to give Krishna something that we won't accept ourselves in the slightest. We want to feel that someone has gone through all the arrangements to build a relationship with us, develop attraction, learn the things we like, learn the things we don't like. That's the experience that most human beings want to go through. So indeed, the process of re-falling in love with Krishna begins with the sadhana of devotional service. And you can accelerate that process from your side, by actively lusting and being greedy in Krishna's service. What about anger? Yes, anger has a very constructive use in bhakti. The Shastra says that you utilize anger when Krishna and Krishna's devotees are offended. But one has to be a bit intelligent about this. Especially we're followers of Lord Chaitanya, who dealt with offenders by giving them the holy name, Krishna consciousness. There's a way to do that without, of course, throwing pearls into a garbage heap, so to speak. But still, we don't take, you know, certainly, you know, we don't take violent action against offenders. jihads and things like that, or the misinterpretation of what a jihad is. We don't do things like that. But still, a devotee can feel anger that just see how the way society is organized minimizes people's chances to be Krishna conscious. You can be constructively angry in that way. Let me do something about it. Let me work harder to reach out to people. It's like I was at Columbia University yesterday, and I witnessed firsthand Gaudiya Pandit Prabhu's very laborious, painstaking, so patient, so sensitive effort to present Krishna consciousness to students. So real anger in bhakti results in constructive positive activity. Just see how people are being denied the opportunity for life's real goal. They're being denied that way in terms of politics, economics, in terms of science, in terms of art. What can I do to make a better situation for people? So that's a constructive use of anger, rather than just kind of nihilistic expression of anger. That's not what bhakti is about. Every emotion in bhakti involves an increase in Krishna's service. That's how you measure. Lamentation, the songs of Narottam Das Thakur. The perfection of lamentation. But his lamentations result in an increase in devotional service. Not simply, oh, I'm so fallen, I've wasted my life, I'm useless, and then you just do nothing, no engagement in bhakti. No. The perfection of lamentation results in an increase in devotional service. This is how to have fun in bhakti. How to invest all aspects of your emotional being in Krishna consciousness. In this way, Krishna consciousness will not remain theoretical, and it will not remain just feeling relief from material existence. Oh, there's nothing wrong in feeling that relief in the beginning of bhakti, but sooner or later, we've got to push on. We've got to move on to working on developing our attraction for Krishna. Attraction for Krishna means attraction for devotional service in all its different aspects. Those were some points I wanted to share with you all today.